the Yankees, Browns, and Tigers all have a shot at the pennant. And you fellas were kind of snake-bitten. You got great pitching from people like Bonham and Roy, but the Browns' pitching was just a little bit better in Chicoutimi Beach in the last day. What do you remember about that final weekend?
Well, there was a trade that beat us. Larry Rosenthal was traded to Philadelphia.
Gee, now explain that. That sounds interesting. How did Rosenthal figure out?
And he came in to pinch hit in the series in New York with Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And he hit, as a pinch hitter, he hit a high fly ball. And I don't know whether they would have allowed it or not. But I was lying in the stands. I was on top of the fence with my back, the lower part of my back on the fence, reaching in like that. And the ball missed my glove. That ball, I could see it. Missed my glove about 3 inches. And that was the only other time that I felt like anybody else had been playing right field, they'd have caught that too, because they had longer arms than I had. So the game's, you always hear a matter of inches. And if that ball isn't a home run, we win, and St. Louis is shut out then as far as the game. See, that's the difference of two games. St. Louis won and we lost. Mm-hmm. And then, as you say, Jakuki beat us. But that was one of the big turning points between winning a pennant and losing one.
And this happened shortly before the end of the season?
That's right. The last series with Philadelphia and New York. Mm. That's exactly when it happened. Mm.
That's interesting.
And, you know, these are the things like this that the public either forgets or they never knew. Mm-hmm. And it was like in the series, the only game we lost, and although I ran into the fence, I still think that if one of the other outfielders had been playing there and he had run into the fence, his height, he would have still caught the ball. This one, though I was in the fence, legally, illegally, in the stands, who knows how they would have ruled it. But it was about that, just about 3 inches past my butt.
That's something.
Yeah.
I asked you about the players on the 43 team. Now I'd like to ask you, or the regulars on the 43 team, I'd like to ask you about those who really were the regulars in 44 and 45. Let's start off with Snuffy Sternweiss.
Snuffy was just a great competitor. He was a fine athlete. A fine athlete. And if he hadn't been killed, you know, in the Hoboken
train wreck,
went down in the river, George would have lasted a long time, and he would have been a fine ball player for long, because he is really quick. You know, that was one of our big assets. McCarthy turned Sternweiss and myself loose. He could run any time he wanted to, or we could hit and run any time we wanted to and everything. He gave us credit for, you know, having a little judgment. But anyway, I knew when George was going to run. Or I'd slip him a sign of what I was going to attempt to do, and then I'm not positive. What did he do? He got 72 bases stolen that year. But anyway,
around 56. In any case, he ended George Pace's 5-year reign.
Yeah. And while I was at the plate, he only was thrown out 3 times that year. And so that's how we worked together, and George. Well, he made it go with his speed, you know. But, the only time I stole bases is when George was on second. he could field too. He had a good field. He wasn't as good as
glove, good at balls hit at him, or did he?
Yeah, he wasn't as. It didn't have the range that Gordon had. Few do. But he was a good one. He did a very, very adequate job.
Apparently he did well at the plate. He led the American League of
That's right.
Was he a punch hitter?
No, sir. He'd make contact and just let the ball go where it wanted. And George was strong enough. I guess George hit 5 or 6 home runs a year. He wasn't that much of a pull hitter. He was more of a straightaway hitter. And he could bunt. And he bunted quite a bit, ran him out. Like, but he and Case, yeah.
Let's talk about a few other outfielders. Tucker staying back?
Well, Tuck, you know, we had him after he'd been in the big leagues a while, and he could still run, still throw. Couldn't hit, didn't hit as well as he did when he was with Chicago, and he'd been in, four World Series before he got there. So he was a veteran and a well-indoctrinated athlete. And I've often said this, I guess Tuck Steinbach was the finest gentleman that I've met in sports. He was a real, real gentleman.
Herschel Martin?
Hirsch, he was a slap hitter, and he did a good job defensively. And he didn't try to overpower you anything, and he was a pest at that plate. Even as tall as he was a pest. And he, that year, he did as good a job in the outfield as anybody, if not better.
One other man who was there for a short while and been a tremendous ball player early in his career, a Hall of Famer, Paul Wehner.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Paul. I'm going to tell you, he was one of the finest hitters I've ever seen. We used to stand behind the backstop in batting practice. And after the pitcher would come through with his arm, you know, where he couldn't change direction or anything like that, we used to holler, we used to say right, left, through the middle. Didn't matter where the pitch were, that's where it went with Paul.
Really?
That's how.
He directed it well.
Oh, could he? He was uncanny the way he could handle that bat. Great hitter. But I never saw him when he was over in the National League and when he had his great years. But boy, I'll tell you, his twilight was still good.
You played throughout the war. I take it you were 4F in the draft for
yes.
No particular reason?
My leg, I had bone trouble in my leg. And I tried to join the Coast Guard, Merchant Marine Academy. And I would have been assistant athletic director, and I got turned down. Then I tried to get in the Navy, and they turned me down. And then the Army drafted me and turned me down. So I said, well, the heck with it then. And I still have tremendous trouble with my knee. That was the beginning of the end of my career when I was hurt in Kansas City in 39. And then I had a spur formed on the head of the bone, and it cut a tremendous hole and ruined the cartilage. And then I had
legs. This affected you while you were in the majors?
Yeah.
Did it cut down on your speed or
mobility? Oh, yeah. I had it operated on in 39, and then when I got to the big leagues, well, Dr. George Bennett of Johns Hopkins, he told me, he says, you can get ready, you're going to get slower every year. And I ran pretty well until I got hurt. Then I got slower and slower.
Do you think that this held up your arrival in the big leagues?
Yes, and I and my longevity, too. And it hurt me tremendously, my leg.
Do you have any stories about wartime travel, food restrictions? Any anecdotes about travel on trains during the war, or meatless days, or gas rationing, or anything of that sort? Nothing stands out?
Not exactly. We used to have Atlee Donald, who was probably as good a bench jockey as there was in the big leagues in those days. And I'll remember in the World Series in 43, he was sitting on the top step, and Klein was playing second base for St. Louis.
Yeah.
And Atlee just talked to him. He'd say different things, nothing obscene. And he'd get their attention. And he had Klein so uptight that he could hardly swing the bat. I mean, he had just gotten his attention. And just on that low, monotone voice, and he was uncanny the way he could do it. And he did it many times with others. But
they were both from Louisiana, too.
Yeah. But it really, any real anecdotes of that, I just can't think of any right now.
Okay. In 1943 and 44, the Yankees held spring training in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and then in 45, you trained with the Red Sox in Pleasantville across the bay from Atlantic mm-hmm. City. Any interesting stories concerning wartime spring training up north?
Well, it was difficult in the cold weather, and then we used to go over in the convention hall and work mm-hmm. out some in there.
This is Atlantic City.
Yeah, and it was a little more pleasant in there, but that wind coming off that shore, it was tough then, and it made it very difficult to get in shape. And if you didn't get in pretty good shape before you arrived, you had a pretty good chance of being hurt. Because you just, sometimes the weather was bitter. I remember one, I forget which year it was, but we were playing the Athletics in Frederick, Maryland, an exhibition game, a spring training game. And in the seventh inning, we had to call a game. We couldn't see the ball go from the pitcher's hand to the hitter because it blended with the snow.
Really?
That's right. That game was called. Connie Mack was the manager.
The one time they had a snowstorm in the middle of the game, I didn't know it was against you fellas.
Well, I'm sure they had them other places, but we did. That actually happened in spring training. And
do you remember this one? I forget who told me this. It was either Erfall or Luther Nerd that the right field fence in Frederick was some ridiculously long distance, sort of 405 feet, and the Keller once hit it on one bounce. Now, whether Keller, who came from Frederick, did it as an amateur or what, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to say this. Anything you heard about Keller hitting the ball for distance is true.
True.
But I'll tell you what I did see in Frederick, another spring training, was I saw I forget who it was now, He later went back in the minors, before the season started, and there was a ball hit in left center, and he dove for it, and his head went right through the wooden fence.
Really?
And it didn't hurt him.
Okay.
But he knocked that boy right out of that fence.
Holy smokes. So, you must have had a hard head.
let's say it was a rotten board.
Right. Now you were sent down, I don't know if you were sent down or retired, but you didn't last with the Yankees. Well, you didn't last too long with them after the war.
No.
What was the reason? Just the return of veterans,
or
injury, or
my leg was gone. It hurt. I mean, it hurt me all the time. But when fellas come back like Maj and Henry. Let's be honest with it. They were great athletes. They were better athletes than I was. And that's the reason I say baseball was good to me. I had the opportunities to do certain things, and I was very appreciative of it. Mm-hmm. And I just liked 2 months of getting a bonus. Mm-hmm. I mean, not a bonus, but retirement.
Pension,
yeah. And but I still, baseball was good to me. And then what that led to, I managed for the Red Sox in 1948, and that was very enjoyable to me. And that when I got my chance to come here. See, and so I'd had my education and my career was over, and I said, "That's it." And I
came here in 1949.
No, 1948. Fall of 1948. See, I managed in 1948, summer of 1948, but I came here in the fall of 1948.
I see. Now, what team did you manage for the Sox?
Baxley, Georgia, in the Georgia State League, a Class D thing. And I had all rookies. Real pleasure. And then I came here, and Mr. Lawrence over here in Portsmouth, who had owner of the Portsmouth Club in the Piedmont League, mm-hmm. he needed an outfielder, and he asked me if I'd play. Well, I did. I led the club in hitting. I hit .338. So I finished my career with the same average that I started it with.
Really?
I led the team in Norfolk when I broke in at .338.
That's what year was that?
1938. We had Rizzuto and Pretty all in on the same club. And then in 1950, I hit .338 again. And I was beaten out for the title by Charlie Maxwell, who was at Lynchburg. He hit .342.
Hmm.
So that was a good way to...
Who once batted ninth for the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Hit ahead of him.
That's right. And then in the middle of the 1950 season, that was 49, and Mr. Lawrence asked me to play until he could find somebody. But in the middle of the season, Al Campanis, who's a general manager now, the Dodgers, was a manager of Newport News Dodgers. And they were going badly. And so he came over to Mr. Lawrence to ask if he could talk to me to finish out the season managing for him, which I did. And then I hung him up.
And that was the year?
1950. So I've had some wonderful experiences, some varied ones.
You should say so. What were your favorite American League parks? Which ones did you enjoy playing in the most?
Well, I hit my first big league home run in the 10th inning in Chicago. I liked to play against the Red Sox. I always hit well against them. And the same way against Detroit. I always hit against Detroit.
Two of your toughest opponents.
Yeah. And, well, it was a little bit tough for everybody against Washington. They had the four knuckleballers. Leonard, Nigling, Hefner, and
Roger Wolf.
Boy, when you came out of there, your eyes were going around like a slot machine. And the hit against him wasn't pleasant. Although we had good luck against him, it just wasn't pleasant for anybody. But we could, Detroit could wear us out. Like, we won the pennant by about 13 games in 43. Well, we played 22 games, against each club. Detroit beat us 15 of the 22 that year. They could wear it. Now, Cleveland couldn't beat us with a stick. Neither could Chicago, and Boston had a terrible time with it. And St. Louis, you come see, come saw, but I'll tell you, Detroit was a nightmare to us. The dudes couldn't seem to do anything right at the right. Yes, they did.
Newhouser, Benton, Trout.
Trucks.
Later on, trucks.
And they had Bridges, and they had White. And,
good pitching.
Yes, they did. Always did have good pitching.
Speaking of pitchers, who were the toughest ones for you to hit against, and also the easiest? Let's take the toughest first.
The toughest was Dizzy Trout, a right-hand pitcher, and I was a left-hand hitter, but he gave us a lot of trouble. One year, he pitched eight times against us, and he beat us eight times. And I never will forget this one day. I guess Dizzy was the fastest I'd ever seen a pitcher, or the fastest I ever saw him. And about the third inning, Art Fletcher, the coach, third base, he hollered, he says, "Hey, Diz." He said, "Are you fast?" And he wound up and he threw that way. He says, "I ain't slow."
Beautiful.
Boy, he could throw that ball. We had some, at one outing, I guess the fastest pitcher I ever hit against was Roy Pomeroy. But he was wild.
Roy.
Yeah, he was wild.
The old giant.
Yeah. Oh, could he throw? But most pitchers back in those days could throw hard. You had even Lopet back then threw fairly hard. And when he got with New York, he didn't throw hard at all. He was just a good control pitcher. But they had Feller and Harder and Cleveland and Lee.
Harder, great curveball. Bridges, perhaps the best from what.
Bridges had a good curveball.
See,
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't have a whole lot of trouble with curveballs. People wonder. Like when I broke in, Keller got hurt in Boston. Mm-hmm. First day of road trip, we had 24 games, and I broke in. My first time at bat was against Tex Houston, and I got a base hit. And when I got back to New York, I was hitting .485 in 24 games on the first road trip. And then they got the book out. I saw no more changes and no more curveballs, strikes, you see, to hit. And they started throwing me fastballs high and away. And they said, "Go ahead and hit it." You hit that long fly, Walker caught three balls in right center in the World Series off of me to the bleacher side of the bullpen. They pitched me high and away, and he couldn't quite pull it enough to get it in. But anyway, I never will forget when McCarthy told me one day, I had gone 0 for 25 now. And being a rookie, I said, the heck was this? I went back to my old way of stance and everything. And they pitched me after I hit the ball over shortstop for a line drive. Come on in.
Long fly balls to right field.
Oh.
Christian Keller getting hurt
yeah.
in Boston.
And then I hit it over shortstop for a base hit. Next time I came up, he pitched me out again. I hit it over short again. And when I hit the dugout, Joe called me, come here. I said, yes, sir. He said, what's coming off? I said, yes, sir. I knew exactly what he was talking about. They paid you for a job. You know, they opened me up for a specific reason. And so I hit 261. They doubled my salary. Simply because of the job I had to do. They understood that the first year I ever hit under 300 in my life. Mm-hmm. And, well, you know, it's bound to get on me. But they understood why. They weren't looking. They would have liked to have had the percentage, but they were looking for that job. They wanted that long ball, but they wanted that ball behind the runner, and they also wanted a guy that wasn't striking out, making a comment. And so,
did what you were told, and you're
right. And when I deviated right. from it, he let me know. That's all was said. I knew exactly what he was saying.
Interesting. What pitchers were the easiest for you to hit?
Houston.
Really?
Texas.
He was a good one.
Yeah. Newsom, Bobo. Left-hander was a good pitcher. I had good luck against him. Newhouser.
I've heard that Newhouser was
hit trouble. He
tougher.
Hit trouble.
You know, it was easier for left-handers to
hit. I beat him two games in the ninth
inning.
Is
this because of the way his ball moved to one?
Well, he makes mistakes with it. He'd get it in tight on you. See, on the left-hander.
Okay.
He'd get that ball in tight on you. Well, see, if it drove you away, it's right on the big part of your bat. See?
Okay.
And so you pull it, and out it goes.
Okay.
See?
But you wouldn't be out in front of it in a foul.
No. See, if he throws the ball down the middle of the plate and lets it go away from you, mm-hmm. the left-hand hitter, mm-hmm. now it's tough. You have to go with it and hit it the other way.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You can't pull
the ball,
it well.
The ball was
yeah, he'd
away.
Make mistakes.
So
I had good luck against him. And Gordon Malzberger, I hit my first home run off him. I had pretty good luck against him.
Other than pitchers now, I've discussed pitchers. What other members of the opposition of that period stand out in your mind for whatever reason? Their ability, or they were cut-ups, or...
Well, naturally, Williams, for his great hitting. Mm-hmm. And in the athletes I told you about with New York...
How about commenting on a good friend of mine, George Case, perhaps the fastest man in the major leagues for his time. You really had to get the ball
George,
over there in a hurry.
George was a constant threat against us because he could run so well. I mean, he could bunt so well. And I tell you, you couldn't keep him off the bases very much. And that was his big asset, and that was the reason he was a thorn in your side all the time. He'd keep you a little upset. He'd make the infield move. Mm-hmm. And anytime you can make the infield move, you're vulnerable. See, that ball getting through. So that's the way. But he was a good outfielder, and he had a pretty good arm. He didn't have that real bullet arm, but he had a good arm. And he could play the game. He could beat you in more ways than one. And that's what made him so valuable.
He really surprised me when he said, pardon the expression, that he was a red-ass ball player.
He was.
Today, he's just the opposite. He's a very loud man.
Well, he's mellow. He's mellow.
Apparently, he was a real competitor.
He was. Well, that's what made him, see? That's what made him. He was aggressive. He couldn't have run bases if he hadn't been aggressive. There is no such thing as a passive or a timid base runner. It doesn't work.
So
And he was just a good. Even though Detroit beat us, I used to enjoy playing against him because it was a challenge, you see. And I liked the Detroit part. It was a good hitting part.
Sure, especially for left-handers.
Yeah.
Williams is favorite too.
Yeah.
One final question. Do you remember any games against service teams particularly well? For instance, there was a lot of publicity when you fellas went up to Great Lakes north of Chicago to play.
Well, every spring we used to go play West Point Army. That was a traditional thing to do, and it was an enjoyable experience. But I tell you one, we're playing against the Norfolk Naval Base here, spring training. Vinnie Smith was the catcher, fought for Pittsburgh, and then became American League umpire and also umpired in the World Series.
He was Norfolk's catcher.
Yeah, and the bases were loaded, and I was the hitter. And there was two men out. And there's Bob Feller coming in. He was stationed here. Well, the count went to 3-2. And I just said to myself, I said, well, I said, it's spring training. And Bob Feller has, this first time he's been on the mound this year. I said, I'll just sit back here and just wait for that fastball and just wear it out. I have a good riffle anyway. And he rolled off the biggest curve you've ever seen for a strike, and I said, well, I'll be damned. I just took it for the third out, third strike and third out. And Vinnie Smith rolled right flat on his back for about 5 minutes and just roared. He just laughed and laughed and laughed. He got the biggest kick out of that, and he did it just for darn meanness. You know, ordinarily it would have been a fastball in spring training now.
Sure.
And he just thought it was just hilarious. And Vinny lives here in Virginia Beach now.
I understand his larynx.
He has a laryngectomy, and he uses an amplifier to speak.
I understand the feller had a malicious curve, a fastball.
He did. You see, the layman, talk about how fast he was, but that wasn't his best pitch. He had one great curve, and that's what made his fastball faster, look faster. He'd start that ball off your shoulder, and boy, boom, you'd catch it almost in the ground.
It was a fast one, too. Right?
Oh, yeah, it was an excellent curve. Well, you talk about an antidote, I'll tell you one. We knew every pitch Feller was throwing in the big leagues.